Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Daiichi Sankyo Inc., we had the pleasure of speaking with Anne P. O'Day, MD, an assistant professor of oncology at Kansas University Medical Center, to discuss key efficacy data from the DESTINY-Breast01 trial and the integration of trastuzumab deruxtecan into the HER2-positive breast cancer armamentarium. In our exclusive interview, O'Day discussed the efficacy and safety of trastuzumab deruxtecan in patients with HER2-positive breast cancer, treatment sequencing recommendations, and future research directions for antibody-drug conjugates in the field. Before we really jump into the specific data from DESTINY-Breast01, what unmet need has trastuzumab deruxtecan really filled in the HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer landscape?
I think it's so important for these women that are affected by HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer to have as many effective therapeutic options as possible. They often are affected with their disease at a very young age. Potentially many life years are impacted. And so everything that we can do to help them live the best quality of life and the longest life possible is what they deserve. We also know that there are scarcity of HER2-positive agents that seem to be effective in the central nervous system. And so that is one caveat of this particular clinical trial that I found encouraging, that the subgroup of patients that had central nervous system metastasis actually had just as good, if not actually a little bit better, median progression-free survival than the group of patients that did not have central nervous system metastasis. So given that that is something that affects many of this particular patient population, I found that really encouraging.
Of course, trastuzumab deruxtecan was approved in December 2019 based on findings from the DESTINY-Breast01 trial. Could you maybe speak to some of the key data points that were shown from the study for which the approval was based on?
Yes, this was very exciting when we received this data initially through press release and then ultimately at the San Antonio meeting in 2019. To have a drug in the third line, which of course this was a third line trial, but most of the patients had had much more therapy than three lines. The number of median prior therapies for the DESTINY-Breast01 patient population was five. And some of the patients had had as many as 17 prior lines of therapy. So when you look at the impressiveness of this data, the duration of response initially reported at 14.8 months and a progression-free survival of 16.4 months. That is impressive, of course, for a third-line trial. But when you take into account that the patients that were treated in this trial actually had been much more heavily pretreated than just third-line, it makes it even more impressive. You know, what we see generally from first-line metastatic HER2-positive trials is, you know, on average, about 18 and a half months, something like that. And when we go to the second line, we usually see a drop off down to about nine and a half months. And so to see a trial in the third line that the initial data presented had a duration of response approaching 15 months was just spoke to, I think, the efficacy of the drug. And that, of course, is why I'm so grateful that we have this drug to offer for our patients in clinical practice.
At the 2020 SABCS meeting, updated results from the trial were presented. So what was really noteworthy about that data set with longer follow-up?
I think we get excited always in breast cancer, especially in the metastatic setting. We get excited when we see these impressive duration of response, very high objective response rates, and so on. That information is obviously encouraging. But this, of course, was phase two data. And so we wanted to see longer follow-up, and we always want to see that with longer follow-up, the results hold up, and that impact of the therapeutic intervention is sustained. And indeed, what we saw with the updated data from San Antonio was that the numbers actually continued to improve with a longer duration of of follow-up. We saw the duration of response go from just under 15 months to over 20 months. And again, this is with 20 and a half months of follow-up, and the numbers continuing to look better. They reported an overall response rate of over 61% with this new updated follow-up. And the progression-free survival, importantly, remember, we think historically in a first-line trial for metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer, we sort of anticipate something in the 18 to 19 month range. And what we see in DESTINY-Breast01 with longer follow-up is that the median progression-free survival with longer follow-up is now 19.4 months. And this is a third-line trial. And as I mentioned, most of the patients in this trial, the median number of prior therapies was 5. With some of the patients having as many as 17 prior therapies. So the numbers are impressive on their own, but when we interpret those through the lens of understanding how heavily pretreated these patients were, it makes them even more impressive.
17 prior lines. I feel like I can't even name 17 agents.
Exactly. And that's something that I think when I first saw this data, I thought to myself, can I even list off 17 prior, 17 regimens for HER2 positive metastatic breast cancer? And obviously, these patients had had extensive therapeutic intervention, and the fact that they still were able to see the sustained duration of response and this high overall response rate is just so encouraging.
Not to, of course, undermine the very impressive results, but interstitial lung disease does still remain a bit of a concern when talking about trastuzumab deruxtecan. So, now that the antibody drug conjugate is approved, is the field maybe understanding or gleaning additional insight into the incidence or the management of ILD in this patient population?
I think in my own practice, I've become much more comfortable with this, as we've had the experience using this drug and seeing these very impressive responses and seeing patients that were, on oxygen and requiring repeated thoracentesis, for example, because of their pleural metastatic disease, now not requiring oxygen, having their pleural drains removed. I mean, these types of results are really, really encouraging. Of course, when we see these really high response rates and this significant progression-free survival and sustained duration of response, unfortunately, that does come at a cost to the patients. There's always going to be some degree of toxicity. I think that with the updated data, the interstitial lung disease across all of the patients in the DESTINY-Breast01 trial. So some of the patients from the phase one and then the patients from phase two was right about 15 or 15.2% of patients had any degree of interstitial lung disease. So although that's relatively low, it can be significant. And unfortunately, there were some deaths in the trial due to interstitial lung disease. I think one of the things that we have to understand is that, with all new therapies, if we refer to, for example, immunotherapy in the treatment of lung cancer, for example, a therapeutic option that has transformed the treatment of non-small cell lung cancer in our country, I see my colleagues who are lung cancer oncologists, thoracic oncologists, I see them managing the risk for pneumonitis, for example. I see them managing that very effectively. And I see them sort of tackling that head on. I see them educating their patients and empowering their patients to report any symptoms. I see them educating their staff, not only their clinical nurses, but their infusion team to watch out for signs and symptoms. And I think that the more awareness there is about this interstitial lung disease as a possibility with this therapy, the more comfortable that we as clinicians and that our patients will become with it, because it's just sort of something that we understand is a possibility, and we just have to make sure that we manage it and that we're sort of on the lookout for it.
With interstitial lung disease aside, are there other maybe notable toxicities that really should be taken into consideration for anybody who is prescribing trastuzumab deruxtecan to patients?
I think, the biggest thing is that it's important to incorporate standard antiemetic prophylaxis when using this drug. I think that there was about close to 70% of people in the original trial that reported nausea. Now, most of that was very low grade, but in the trial, they did not have any standard antiemetic prophylaxis. And so what I have experienced in my clinical practice is that we have standard premedications. We use dexamethasone and a 5-HT3 antagonist as standard pretreatment for this antibody drug conjugate. And since we have been doing that, in my own clinical practice, I really haven't seen significant nausea. And I think that that's something that just knowing that having such a simple intervention as the pre-medication can really improve the quality of life for the patients as they undergo this treatment.
So now in terms of sequencing, I know that you mentioned that this is currently for the third line setting. Do you anticipate that changing over time in the coming, months to years, moving into earlier treatment lines, for example?
I think that this will continue to evolve as we all see these impressive responses in our own practices and we get comfortable using this drug. We will continue to look at the patient that is before us in our clinical practice and try to figure out, where does that patient fit in terms of the available clinical trial data? What patient population most is representative of that individual patient? And I think the patients that we are treating now in our clinical practice with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer are going to continue to be different in the future. And that is because, for example, when the DESTINY-Breast01 trial took place, of course, none of those patients had received adjuvant T-DM1, for example. And so in the future, we have patients since the presentation of the CAFRIN trial at San Antonio now several years ago, which changed the standard adjuvant therapy for HER2-positive breast cancer patients, we will now have patients in the metastatic setting that have received, for example, adjuvant T-DM1. They may have received extended adjuvant therapy with neratinib. And those are patients that weren't necessarily included in the DESTINY-Breast01 trial. I think what's going to become important for us is just like we do in the hormone receptor positive metastatic breast cancer patient population, we look at the time to relapse, we look at their last therapy in the adjuvant setting, we look at their sensitivity to previous endocrine therapy. I think that treatment of HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer is going to become very much the same thing. We're going to look at what was the last therapy this patient received. Did they just complete adjuvant T-DM1 when they experienced relapse? Of course, that's a patient population that I would be very likely to use trastuzumab deruxtecan in the first line setting, even because that patient would have such a short time to relapse after trastuzumab and after T-DM1. So this will continue to evolve. The patient population in the metastatic setting will continue to transform. And I'm so grateful for that because that means that we're making progress.
Do you anticipate maybe other future directions with this agent combination strategies or anything else that you're really kind of looking forward to seeing how this agent might evolve?
I think clearly this agent is effective. That's clear. We see most of the patients responding and having this impressive duration of response. And so when we have an agent that we know is effective, we get very excited and optimistic about how we can use it in other areas. Can it be used and be effective in the adjuvant setting or perhaps the neoadjuvant setting? Can it be combined with other targeted therapies so that we can just continue to inch closer to a cure for HER2-positive breast cancer? I'm optimistic that in my lifetime as a breast oncologist that we will see that day. And I think that this is an important agent in that regard. But I'm looking forward to seeing neoadjuvant data, adjuvant data, and additional results as we move forward with those trials.
Speaking of future directions and to kind of round out the conversation, other antibody drug conjugates as well as just other emerging agents are currently in the HER2-positive breast cancer pipeline. So are there any specifically that you'd like to highlight that you're really keeping an eye on that looks exciting to you?
I think the antibody drug conjugate drug class is incredibly exciting. When we just think about it on a basic level, it just makes so much sense to have a targeted therapy and take effective cytotoxic chemotherapy and link those two things together so that you can deliver the cytotoxic therapy directly where you want it within the cancer cell, as opposed to just in the systemic circulation. I think in breast cancer right now, there's something like over 200 antibody drug conjugates in development. And I can't speak to any of those specifically, except to say, I think that this is a drug class that we will continue to see more and more. And I'm looking forward to seeing that data in the future.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Daiichi Sankyo Inc. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science Summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.